The Eighth Gene Key. The transformational path of the Eighth Gene Key moves from mediocrity to exquisiteness. It's the path of style. As we know, every one of these shadows has a dilemma. And the dilemma of the Eighth Shadow is imitation. And as we also know, every shadow state involves being a victim of something or someone. That's the hallmark of all awareness that remains rooted in fear. So here with the Eighth Shadow, we have a pattern rooted in the deep-seated fear of what others may or may not think of us. It's all really about image. The image we project outwards onto the world. The image we have of ourselves. And the image we have of the image others have of us. Yeah, it's another tangled web, this shadow. And the dilemma is imitation. And at the shadow consciousness, we're always a victim of this imitation at one level. So in its repressed state, as it moves and drives vast numbers of human beings in the shadow consciousness field, this shadow maintains the status quo. That's what it does. It's that part of us that is not willing to leave the comfort zone of the status quo. And it manifests in our willingness to become institutionalized, to become homogenized, to live an ordinary, mundane, monotonous, and above all, safe life. Then my image of the shadow is as a kind of genetic suburbia. It's a nice image for you to contemplate. And it's a space inside that's built through our childhood, through our conditioning as we develop, you know, especially through the early cycles, through the first 7 years, the second 7 years, and the third 7 years, our first 21 years, but particularly the first 7 years. And I also sometimes refer to this shadow as maintenance consciousness. These are the people who exist in the world simply at a maintenance level. They maintain the institutions, they maintain the systems, they maintain the structures of the world, but they don't really add anything to it. You know, they may add something through their goodwill or through their kindness, you know, on an inner level, but externally, they don't add anything really new to the world. Because everyone always evolves as they live, to some degree. But yeah. Externally, these people are really just maintaining the machine that purports to make us all feel safe. And you know, when you're not aware of the fear that drives you, you live very superficially. You live in a grey world. This is the world of mediocrity. And you may even be successful. And you may think you don't live in this world. You may live a glamorous life. You may be popular, kind. You may appear interesting to others and to the media. But what we really mean by mediocrity, you know, I'm not talking here about externals. I'm talking about the quality of your consciousness. And it's not possible to experience the peaks of consciousness when you repress the fear that lies inside you. Oh yeah, you can distract yourself from that fear in a million different ways. But then the price you pay is that you can't know ecstasy. You can't know the higher states. And there are billions of people across our planet, and so very, very few of them remember this ecstasy that was present all around us as a young child. That light that every child emanates, and which gradually over time, through our education, through our upbringing, through the local and the global conditioning, that light becomes throttled and grows dim. And in case you're thinking that this isn't me, you know, I'm no victim of mediocrity. I've escaped all that humdrum existence. I'm different. I'm following the alternative route, the path less travelled. In case you're thinking that, be careful. Many people mistake the path less travelled for the common path. Especially now in the West, we have this whole alternative lifestyle movement. You know, it's alternative. It's the alternative. So you can allegedly escape the rat race. You can drop out of the grey, mediocre world of the masses, and you can do something colourful. You can do something You can do yoga. You can travel to exotic places. You can study with great teachers. You can be a kind of gypsy or an artist. You can live a right brain life. But you need to look carefully at yourself here. Is this the path less traveled? Or are you still a victim of mediocrity? And by this I mean, are you reacting to mediocrity? Is your life a reaction to not wanting to be mediocre? Because if it is, you're still caught by imitation. This is the dilemma. How many people do we now see around the world living alternative lifestyles? It's just become a new kind of imitation. It's a new kind of suburbia. It's a new kind of security to be a seeker or even to be an outcast. It's much safer than it used to be. So you can see how subtle the shadow states can be sometimes and how easily we can become ensnared in their promises of security. And I'm not saying these things as a judgment of anyone's lifestyle. I'm really not. But this eighth shadow is a big one for all of us, especially in this community, because it's all about image. It's about style. It's about wanting to look good in the eyes of society or in the eyes of our milieu. It's about wanting to do the right thing, or it's about reacting to all that and wanting to be seen as the opposite. Someone who never does the right thing, rebellious. I'm someone who doesn't care what others think. Ah, but you do care. Subtly you care because you want them to see you in that way. The last thing you want is for them to think you're mediocre because you are mediocre at some deep, deep level. You haven't stopped reacting. You want them to see you as a rebel. So you've become part of a rebellious counter-movement. And even though you may claim to be different, in fact, you too are imitating all the other rebels, all the other outcasts, all the other seekers. You know, to become a true rebel, that's a different thing. Because if you're not a true rebel, you've become a victim again of the mediocrity at a subtle level. I hope you can see what I'm getting at. You've become a reactionary. And your art, even though it may be beautiful, it doesn't contain that true exalting genius. It's subtly imitative. Your dance is still subtly self-conscious. Your music doesn't quite rise to the ecstatic planes. It's still a little bit mediocre. It may be colourful, interesting. It may even be exotic. But still, there's a big difference between exotic and genius. So the eighth shadow is all about image. It's all about investment in our image. And most of the time that investment is unconscious. We're not aware of it. If we keep our image intact, whether we're boring or whether we're super hip, we're still not a true rebel, because subtly we still have an image in mind of who we are. Because the true rebel, the one who's truly released their inner light, has not even a breath of imitation about them. They're constantly transcending all definitions of who they are. They can never step in the same river twice. They have truly taken the path less travelled. So we all need to be wary of this shadow. It can catch us. These shadow states can be slippery as hell. And they are, after all, the pathways crisscrossing hell. Because that's what the shadow state is. It's hell. The eighth gift of style. So we've already seen at the shadow frequency how this notion of image governs this gene key. And you can see how deeply we become victims of lifestyle. Well, the gift of style is not about lifestyle. It's not about any of that, despite how the word may make it sound. This is not about how you look or what you wear or even what you do. This is about the quality of your consciousness. You know, the gift frequency all resonates with genius. That's what it's about. It's where and how the shadow is transformed from potential into kinetic energy. And this is why the gift frequency releases such a tide of creativity into the world. It's the atomic explosion that occurs as all those definitions of who you are begin to melt and you begin to enter another dimension, another way of living that's far more outrageous, far more dangerous than anything you could ever dream up for yourself. The eighth gift is the gift of style. And true style is always rebellious. It's rebellious because it's always recreating itself. It isn't afraid of the mundane material plane, and it isn't in reaction to it. This is a state that's always exploring new paradigms, and that's always expanding its own boundaries into new areas. It's not afraid of being mediocre. It's not afraid of being seen as mediocre. The programming partner here is the 14th gift of competence. And these are the kind of people who are not afraid of trying new things. They're not afraid of constantly redefining themselves. And their competence derives from their lack of a fixed self-image. So they can be one moment a plumber and the next they can be a pirate. I mean anything. Whatever is called upon. Whatever is called out by the moment. The 8th gift has no investment in its own image. It's the process in which self-image is being continually short-circuited. Because the moment you surrender to life, you surrender to a dance that's so mysterious that you can never follow it with your mind. So you're going to have to drop all your ideas of who you are and what kind of person you are. I'm a kind person. I'm a warrior. I'm angry. I'm masculine. I'm feminine. I'm a bad boy. I'm a tomboy. I'm funny. I'm enlightened. I'm not enlightened. You know, all of it, all these definitions of who we think we are, they all have to go into the alchemical cauldron here of the gift frequency. You know, just as the shadow is the shadow of imitation, this is the genius of non-imitation. And all genius has this quality. It's always surprising itself. It's always surpassing itself. It's always scintillating itself. It's capable of anything and everything. And in this sense, the 8th shadow is truly rebellious. It's rebellious to its own image of itself. It won't allow you to rest anywhere with an image of who you are. It's you, unique, always changing, always a new style. It's not a fixed style. It comes thundering out of the void. It's life itself, sporting with itself. So you can perhaps begin to feel how mad this gift is. You know, and the level of surrender it demands. And yet all these gifts are a fractal aspect of the whole, so all awakening has to pass through this phase in which self-image is short-circuited, in which you constantly confuse your own mind with the paradox of your own existence. So ask yourself how surrendered you really are, and what would you give up? Would you give up your alternative lifestyle if the calling came? Would you return to the world of mediocrity if the calling came? How mad are you really? So the gift of style bridges the paradoxes. It unites the extremes. It unifies male and female by raising your ideas of what they are mentally and emotionally. And it shows you how to live them internally. And then as you emanate this rebellious inner spirit, this great inner light, then you begin to radiate your true style. And that's something beyond words, because your style is in your radiance. It's in your aura. It's in the timbre of your voice, as you allow yourself to rest in the uncertainty and the vulnerability of life. The gift of style invites you to be in the world all the way, rather than in reaction to it. And these are people who may live deeply rebellious inner lives, but who may lead utterly ordinary outer lives. Because you need not fear mediocrity as long as your heart is open and singing. You no longer need react to it and therefore find yourself at odds with the status quo, an outsider. True style is found in the marketplace, living as an example of a true rebellious human being, unchained by external definitions and unfettered by conditioning, ancestral or cultural. True style is happy to merge with the masses. It's delighted. That's where it belongs. And yet it can never, never be missed. It's so beautiful and so unusual in its creative vigour and its open-heartedness. So as the Gene Key says, true style is more than skin deep. It goes all the way to the source. The 8th city, exquisiteness. It's quite a path, this path from mediocrity to style. You can feel how different the word style is to our modern definitions of what we think that word means. And we tend to see it as something fixed. And yet here in this gene key, it's describing the continual arcing of consciousness as it surprises itself by mutating in every living moment. So this constant inner outpouring of the mystery is literally brought to its peak here in the eighth city, the city of exquisiteness. And they're funny, these words for the cities, you know, because how do you use a word for a state that exists beyond words? This is always my dilemma. But we're only describing genetic effects of that state here. The cause is beyond words, the experience. But the effects we can envisage a little. You know, but it always has to be a bit of a story, a bit of a conjuring trick. So it's good not to get too attached at this level to the words. So I'm going to try and enter the field of its energy and bring some of that charge and that energy into my words. Certain gene keys always trigger spontaneous images inside me, and this is one of them, this eighth gene key, especially the city. I always see a diamond here, always a diamond. You know, why do I see a diamond? Well, in contemplating this, it's a metaphor. You know, a diamond is a symbol. It's an emblem for exquisiteness because the diamond is multifaceted, just like the self, and yet it's also one, indivisibly beautiful. It's also rare, it's unique, and it's geometrically perfect. And the octahedral shape of the diamond is universal to all life forms. It's funny that it's an octahedron. It just occurred to me that it's an eight. From DNA helices to the universal lattice that holds together all creation, they're all eights. The original name of this eighth hexagram, in fact, in the I Ching, is holding together. And the universe is held together by this exquisite, invisible unity. And that's also why this eighth gene key is allied to the second gene key of unity. I mean, this is the codon ring of water. And these two gene keys, the two and the eight, they're the two great ladies of the genome, the two great feminine archetypes. So perhaps that's why they say that the diamond is a lady's best friend. And yet, on its own, the diamond, it's not enough for me. It's not quite enough of a symbol to convey the other side of this city, the temporariness, the flow. Because we are each exquisite, and we are each indivisible, unique alonenesses, standing like jewels in the sparkling flood of space-time. But the eighth city also conveys the essence of this feminine quality of flow, of water. Because the diamond is brittle, just like the individual who doesn't know its true nature as being one with all that is. The individual on its own is brittle. But the other side to this, the paradox of this city, is that it's collective. It's fluid. It's ever-changing. It's curving. It's unpredictable. It's yielding. And it's weak. It's weak in the most mystical sense of that word. Because the diamond may be strong, but water is weak. It has no fixed substance, and therefore it has the kind of weakness that nothing can stick to it. It's magnetically weak. So it attracts no karma, no agenda, no attention, no thoughts, no opposition. It's kind of like a monopole, an element that just rests in its oneness, hanging in infinity. So the eighth city is like this, completely at rest. And really this is the ultimate rebellion, to do nothing. You become an anti-rebel here. You've moved beyond the game of rebellion and individuality. You've entered the paradox, and in finding yourself, you've simultaneously lost yourself. You've become so individualized, you've become everything and everyone. You've become collective. You've become your nightmare. I can only move into paradoxical wordplay when I enter the spirit of these cities. It all becomes so fluid, it becomes so voluptuously slippery when words dance along the banks of the wordless like this. You know, the eighth city has embraced the wordless world, the world of impermanence, and it's found the permanence of consciousness within the impermanence of form. And that's what releases its full atomic beauty. Thus shall you think of this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream. These words, famous words, from the oldest of the great sutras of India, aptly named the Diamond Sutra, they capture the essence of the truth of impermanence. So think about your life through this lens of the eighth city. Think about the people around you who you love, the places you love, the books, teachings, films, stories, the children, the sun, the moon, the ocean, mountains, trees, stars. They're all fading away. Along with you, at least the you you recognize, they'll all soon be gone. You know, in a sniff, they could be gone. You know, one asteroid and puff, this planet's gone. History. And to enter into the Siddhic realm is to let go of all history as though it had never even happened. The person you were is not who you are. Millions of years of evolution, of story, poetry, wisdom, love, as humanity develops its wonderful final flowering, and then puff, it's all just erased, no traces. Our whole story just forgotten. All our drama, all our evolution, our striving, our seeking, all one day gone. And then we rest. Consciousness just rests. The eighth city is completely at ease, at rest. So when you fall into this fluid state, where your heart sits floating like a diamond lotus on the ever-changing waters of life, then your essence will finally be at ease. Your essence is at ease. It was all just a joke. It was all just a game. As all the poets have always known, our beautiful, exquisite world and all of us, our souls, are nothing more than a puff of dust in the wind. Thus shall you think of this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream.